This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach show number 60. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And my name is Peter Harold from South Africa.
Coming up on the show, Gary Palmer gives you another batting tip, and we chat to the Yorkshire indoor school boss Ashley Metcalf. But first, let's meet our guest co-host for this week. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm very good, thank you very much. Yes, yeah, it's good to have you on the show, filling the boots of Kevin so admirably. So, let's start by finding a little bit about you. You are in South Africa, we know that, but what do you do there?
I'm currently working for the Ryan Mans Cricket School of Excellence in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. I'm actually the video analyst, the full-time video analyst for the cricket school. Mm-hmm. So I tend to work with the better cricketers of the cricket school one-on-one, helping them with their techniques, analysing it on video, and being able to give them the feedback that they need to improve their techniques.
And do you still play yourself? Did you used to play?
I used to play quite often. I'm actually from Pretoria, which is the home of the Nashua Titans, where every de Villiers player used to hit.
Yeah.
And I played actually second 11 cricket there, so I was involved with the franchise. But for the last 2 or 3 years, I haven't been able to play because I'm coaching full-time.
So you must be a little bit of a cricket nut to be going from playing into full-time coaching like that.
I love the coaching a lot. I love working with young cricketers, trying to improve their games. I think I found my calling, actually, so I'm quite happy with that.
Oh, fantastic. So if anyone's listening who's in South Africa and they want to find out more about the type of coaching you do at the cricket school, how can they find out more information?
Well, our website is actually quite easy. It's www.cricketschool.co.za. If they want to contact me directly, it's very simple. It's peter@cricketschool.co.za.
What does a typical week look like for you now that you're coaching full-time?
Pretty much, I'm involved with four different schools. So yeah. Depending on Monday through to Saturday, I'll be for about an hour and a half each day. Each afternoon, I'll be at a different school coaching, doing group coaching with the kids, helping with the teams and stuff like that. Other than that, my times are fully booked up with one-on-one sessions for about 45 minutes per cricketer, where I do the one-on-one coaching. I put the kids on video. We work on their batting techniques, chat about the mental side of their games and stuff like that, preparing them for the Saturday matches, which will obviously come up at the end of the week. It's very busy. We try and fall on quite a lot, so pretty much I'm busy from about plus one in the afternoon until about plus six, so it's quite busy.
So how many players would you see in a week?
On average, if you include the group coaching, I'd probably see about 60 to 70 cricketers a week. One-on-ones, I see about 25 kids for 45 minutes at a time. And then obviously I'm involved with four or five different sides at different schools all around Cape Town. So yeah, on average about 60 to 70 cricketers a week.
And when you see someone stands out, what makes a player stand out to you from all those young players that you see every week?
The most important factor, I think, is just it's presence. You can pick up when somebody is just stands ahead of everybody else. Batting-wise, it's normally the type of batsman that has a lot of time to play the ball. Bowling-wise, it's the type of bowler that as he runs in, you've just got this feeling that he will trouble the batsman every time he bowls. So it's just that sort of a little bit of aura that he's got around him that makes him stand out from everybody else, which I can obviously pick up and it makes you think that this guy's pretty special.
And you do group coaching as well from time to time?
Yeah, we do a lot of group coaching actually. This Friday afternoon, we're busy with group coaching at Rondebosch Boys High School in Cape Town. Where we see about 40 to 50 cricketers on a sort of every Friday, working with their basic skills and batting, bowling, fielding, and sort of the mental fitness, agility side of things. And then in the holidays, we have holiday clinics as well, where we see between 80 and 120 different kids in four different areas across South Africa. So we do a lot of group coaching with the kids where we try and just impart the basic skills of cricket, batting, bowling and fielding to them, yeah.
I think that's quite an underrated skill, the ability to keep a big group of kids entertained. You know, everybody doing something all the time like that. It's quite glamorous, the video analysis and all that side of things, isn't it? But I think what gets forgotten sometimes is that the majority of kids are exposed to cricket through sort of some sort of group coaching session first, aren't they? So what would you say is important when it comes to when you're a coach and you stood there in front of a group of, I don't know, 60 kids or something, and you've got an hour with them? What's important to be able to coach them effectively, in your view?
I think the most important thing is obviously planning. You've got to be able to plan the session down to the last minute, because that makes it easier for you to control the kids. Because if you have planned the session out, it's much easier to control the sort of flow of how your 50 to 60 children meander around the field. The second most important thing is having short, sharp sessions where you spend 5 or 6 minutes per station trying to work on a specific skill, so the kids don't become bored. As soon as they become bored, obviously we all know the kids of 8, 9, 10 years old have got a short attention span. So it's making sure that your session is very short and your activity is very short to keep them engaged and then keep them moving along, as well as having a very authoritative presence in terms of kids must listen to you. You must talk in a loud voice. Obviously, that's very, very important. Mm-hmm. And being able to make sure that as it carries on, everything is pre-planned. So the kids know that for the next 5 minutes, this is going to happen. The next 5 minutes, that's going to happen. If as long as you have planning in place, and as long as you have short, sharp activities in place that the kids can stay focused and engage them, it makes it a lot easier to control a crowd of children like that.
One of the things that I see quite a lot when I'm doing group coaching with other coaches is they're so passionate, the coach in question, that they want to impart all this information to the kids, and they sit them down and they give them a long lecture on, you know, whatever the particular subject is, you know, the top elbow or whatever it happens to be, and then they get so into the coaching when they're doing it that they're giving the kids the one-to-one attention, each one, even though they're split into little groups. You know, he's spending a lot of time giving one-to-one attention to one person. And I think that all that leads to is the ones who aren't getting the attention, getting bored quite quickly. Do you ever see coaches making mistakes like that?
Quite often, actually. Obviously, we're all enthusiastic and we're all passionate about the game of cricket. So we're going to try and, as you say, import as much information as possible in the shortest possible time. And that is the problem. The problem is not so much that you want to impart this information. The problem is in terms of how we get it across. And I've always found effectively is when the kids actually do something is when they learn more. Not from listening to you, but from them actually performing the exercise themselves is when the sort of proper coaching takes place. And then it's much easier to go from cricketer to cricketer and try and just spend a minute with them and just try and correct something specific, whereas everyone else is still involved. As soon as you have a kid sitting around for too long and not actually hitting cricket balls or bowling cricket balls or catching balls, it becomes a very tedious exercise for them and becomes a nightmare to organize. So, yeah, I think the main thing is just try and keep them as active for as long as possible and try and show by example rather than by lecturing or chatting to the kid what the exercise is, and let them do it and let them figure it out themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Reserve that for the one-to-one sessions.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to a question that we've had from a reader. It was quite an interesting topic that he talked about. He calls himself Jonesy, and he said he's been in pretty good form recently, controlling the ball well when bowling and feeling good at the crease and making runs. But he had a very poor game. He bowled badly. He got out for a duck, playing a bad shot, and generally, you know, everything went wrong. You know, his lunch went down the wrong way, I'm sure, as well. So he was asking for some advice on how do you, I mean it's quite a psychological question, I suppose, but how do you bounce back from a mistake like that? How do you put that out of your head and go into the next game not worrying about, oh, I hope I don't happen again, and just thinking positively? What would you be able to give any advice on that?
I think it comes down to just it's also preparation aspect again. It's you've got to try and be as obviously consistent as possible in terms of how you prepare. Because if you consistently prepare the same way and that gives you good results, then obviously that is what you're sort of striving for. Sometimes you can't control what how you get out. Sometimes you can't control what an umpire does for you on a specific day in terms of giving you out when you're not out or anything like that. What you've got to trust in is your preparation, your routine that you trust in, your routine that you're happy with, which allows you to be successful. And that's ultimately the only way really that you're going to achieve consistent success is by being following your planning, having a set routine that you try to follow every time, having the same type of plan when you go into bat or bowl. And in doing that, always falling back on your trusted routines and your trusted characteristics of success. And once you can do that, your success will ultimately, over time, just be on an upward curve. It will never, obviously, on some days, like I said, you can't control what's going to happen in the game. But if you trust yourself, you prepare well, you have a set routine that gives you success all the time, and you stick to that routine, it makes it much easier for you to perform successfully and ultimately be a successful cricketer. So the advice I can give to Jonesy is just stick to what you know best, stick to what you do best, and if you do those things, it makes it easier for you to be successful and bounce back from any mistakes or failures that you tend to have.
And some people have quite elaborate routines. You know, it's almost sort of it's almost superstitious in the amount of things that they have to do. And some people, they can just rock up and they don't have as much of a routine, but they still have something. So different people have different ways of establishing a routine. How would you go about if a young player came to you and said, "Look, I haven't really got a routine. How can I go about working out what the best routine is for me?" What would you say to that player?
I would say just try and find the things that make you feel good, whether it's hitting underarm balls for about 5 or 10 minutes just before the game starts, or trying to bowl the ball in a specific area as a warm-up. That gives you a better sort of sense of just making me feel good inside. So when I go into the game, I feel like I'm on top of my game. I feel like I'm in the groove. I feel like my eye is in. So it's trying to find something simple that makes you feel good as a cricketer before you start playing, and in that way, obviously, as we all know, positive thinking ultimately results in positive performance. So trying to find something, whether it's just hitting a ball on a bat or just throwing catches to each other, which makes you feel good before the game starts, allows you to build up a simple routine and makes you feel positive so that when you go into the game, you feel like you're on top of your game and you're going to perform well.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I mean, just from my own experience, I'm a wicketkeeper and... you know, I find that there's a couple of things that really make a difference to the way that I feel before I start playing, and of course the way you feel is very important, isn't it? So I mean, if I sort of change into my even just the fact of changing into your training gear and putting your training gear on and then going out with the equipment that you need and walking onto the field and thinking, right, you know, the game starts from this moment because my preparation starts from this moment. That works really well for me. And the other thing that I have to do, and I don't know how much it is psychological or how much it actually gets me ready, is I have to get someone to hit me a few tennis balls before I catch any cricket balls. I want someone to get someone to hit me maybe 20 or 30 tennis balls just so I get that feeling of catching the ball nicely and nice and softly, and then I'm away then, and then we can do whatever fielding practice or warm-ups that we do with the rest of the team. But I have to get those few hits with a tennis racket and a tennis ball in, which I've talked about before on the show. So I completely agree with you about routine. What sort of routine did you have? Were you the superstitious type? You have to put one pad, left pad on first or anything like that?
Not too superstitious when I started off. I'm one of those guys. I try and have eating arranged in my bag the night before. I think my preparation starts really the night before. I try to make sure that my kit is packed in a specific way in terms of where my clothing is, where my kit is packed, boots are clean and things like that, because that gives me a good sense of going to bed and feeling in the morning when I wake up, I'm not going to be rushed. I can have a good breakfast in the morning and get to the ground in good shape. When I'm at the ground, it's pretty much just feeling when I warm up in the morning, making sure that I have a good stretch. That's very important for me. Not so much the bowling of the balls, because that's the preparation I've done in the week, but making sure that I've had a good stretch, making sure that I've brought my heart rate up to a level where it matches intensity. Those are the types of things that make me feel like I'm ready for the game now. And those are the things that I try and speak to. Not too much superstition in terms of which player to put on where, but making sure that I'm prepared in terms of how my kit is packed. Having a good breakfast in the morning, arriving at the ground early. Those are things that put me in a good frame of mind and allow me to have my routine set up in terms of being able to play the game the way I want to play it. Yeah.
Exactly, and people almost forget about that. You know, it's so trivial that you think it's not important. But I think if it's important in your head, then it's important to do. And you know, you were talking about packing the bag there. I'm exactly the same. You know, got to make sure that the bag is packed in a certain way. Otherwise, it doesn't quite feel right. And you can say, oh well, you know, that's getting a bit obsessive. But it's all about how it feels in your own head, isn't it? And if everything feels like it's going well, then you're going to carry that out onto the pitch with you, aren't you?
Exactly. Look, it's individual for everybody. So every guy has got his own secret team. It's just about, like I said earlier, it's just about finding what makes you feel good, what makes you feel positive, what makes you feel as relaxed as possible. If you can find that specific, whether it's hitting 20 or 50 tennis balls as a wicketkeeper or hitting 5 golf balls as a batsman, if you can find that which makes you feel good and makes you feel like you're prepared for the game, all the best for you, and it will make it perform obviously much better because it puts you in a positive frame of mind.
Okay, so let's move on to the next part of the show. As usual, we've got the Pitch Vision batting coach, Gary Palmer, with us to answer another question and give us another tip. Gary's a former first-class cricketer for Somerset, and he now helps young cricketers make it into the professional game with his CCM Academy. If you want to find out more about Gary and the coaching that he does, you can visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show for another week.
Hi, Dave. Good to be back. Your phone bill must be going through the roof at this stage.
Yeah, that's right. But it's okay because we're sorting out people's problems, so it doesn't matter.
All for good cause.
Exactly. Right, so this week we've got a problem from Matt. He's a 17-year-old opening batsman, and he has found that he is very good at seeing off the new ball and playing with a solid defensive technique. But the problem he's having is that once he's done that and the ball's a few overs old, he can't accelerate and he feels like he's stuck in the same gear. So he can't accelerate his slow scoring. So what he wants to know is how can he improve his scoring rate once he's seen off the new ball?
My guess is that, like a lot of opening batsmen, he might be into a mindset that his job is just to stay there and survive. And sometimes when people are doing that, they end up with a very, very short backswing. So they sort of push at the ball. I mean, once he has seen off the new ball, and if he wants to accelerate the run rate, another way he can do that is to make sure that he's more aware of where the fielders are. He's got his partner backing up and he's running between the wickets. Is very, very good. But I would say to that player, he needs to, or he, she needs to, when they open the bat in, go out there with a mindset that I'm looking to attack the ball and hit down the ground with drives if I can. And if every ball happens to be on a good length, well, then you play your defensive shot. But when you've been in a bit longer and the bowlers are getting tired and they start bowling half volleys, you know, if you have been looking to score, you just click into it because you've got a nice high backlift and you'll probably be able to play your drives really well. But my guess is this particular person probably has got a very short backlift. Because, you know, when you go into bat, if you get a half volley first ball on or outside off stump or on middle and leg, it's a safe shot to hit through it and drive it. It's no good going out there thinking I'm going to block everything that comes down because my job is to take the shine off the ball because, you know, you're missing out on half volleys. The pressure will build on you because the bowler's getting away with bowling bad deliveries and you're just patting it straight back to him or her. So, but I would say it's the backswing. And if I was that particular player, I would practice it in the nets, again, with a bobble feed or a bowling machine, and just practice picking the bat up nice and high and smacking the ball straight back over the bowler's head for a series of shots. Then I would do one over the bowler's head, one along the ground, and then I would progress on to hitting them all along the ground, and then progress that on to feeds that are mixed. So some you defend, some you drive, some you leave outside off stump. But, you know, in today's climate, with the way people score quickly and 2020, you know, you need to be or have the ability to play attacking shots. So that's what I would say to that person.
You mentioned also, as well as the technical side, you mentioned learning to rotate the strike and pick up the quick singles and turn ones into twos and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you recommend practicing that, doing middle practice where you're judging runs and trying to score quick singles in practice?
Definitely. Well, I mean, when you get nearer the season, you're practicing outdoors in match situation, that is something that is high on the list of what you need to be practicing as far as tactics or your game plan goes. But you know, you've got to be able to hit the ball to the boundary. I mean, just going back on your question, the other thing is that particular person may well have a very tight bottom hand as well, and they might feel that they can't let their arms go through the ball. So again, they might want to think about keeping that bottom hand loose while they're looking to play their attacking shots, but keep it loose when they're playing the defensive shots as well. But you definitely need to practice that sort of thing, you know, getting your singles. But one mistake that people make is that someone runs up and bowls a ball on the length, or a machine puts a ball on the length, and coaches I've seen put cones square of the wicket, lots of different colours, and they'll tell a player to hit a straight ball through square leg or hit a straight ball through point where the green cones are. And the young players tend to do that by stepping straight and swinging across the line, or you know, opening the face of the bat and going in two out, rather than manoeuvring their body so they're actually playing the ball with the fuller face of the bat, and the bat is actually swinging in a straight line to the ball. Sometimes that type of practice can make people's technique deteriorate. I mean, the one thing I would do if I was looking for singles in a game would be look around the field, be aware of the gaps, play the ball as you see it, you know, but when one goes in a particular area that you know is between two fielders and you think there's a chance of a run, that's when obviously you get your quick single. But to go out and try and face a decent bowler with a newish ball when it's doing a bit and hit a straight ball square of the wicket on off or leg side, theory-wise, it's a great idea. But in the real world of playing cricket against good bowling, you know, you're likely to get out early on doing it and you defeat the whole object of getting in and getting some quick runs for your team.
If you'd like coaching from Gary, you can attend his academy or get all his drills and tips online. Visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer for more information.
The next segment of the show will be interviewing Ashley Metcalf, head of the Headingley Cricket Academy, which is the home of Yorkshire Cricket Club, Cricket County. He played first class cricket for 15 years and is still involved in coaching and playing club cricket today.
Can you start by telling us a bit about what the running of a big cricket centre like the one at Headingley entails day to day?
Yeah, it's a nice mix. There's a bit of coaching. Obviously, we've got our doors wide open. We're trying to attract as many youngsters and senior players of all ages and sexes into the centre to try and encourage them to play cricket and develop their own skills. So we've a mixture, really, of trying to do a bit of coaching. So that's very much myself and a couple of other key coaches. Mm-hmm. But also in between that, then, is the usual more mundane aspects of the job, which is more of a managerial and administration role, making sure that it actually ticks over correctly every day, and the kind of tight financial constraints these days, make sure it actually tries to make a profit.
So how much coaching do you actually get to do? What is that split between the business side and the coaching side?
It's probably not as much as I'd like. I think that's a fair comment. But I probably do about 30% of my working week will be coaching. And a bit of coach education as well in there. But generally coaching for about 30%. The rest of the time is eaten up with meetings and planning, trying to attract new business.
And is that coaching all ages and abilities?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's anything from the real youngsters. And we have a great scheme here at Yorkshire called Cricket in the Classroom, where we attract primary schools from throughout the county to come and spend a day at the centre. And that includes some skills coaching and games. But then we also have them in a classroom teaching around sports-related topics and tour of the ground and the usual things. But, you know, the cricket in the classroom, we usually have, during any one year, about 3,500 to 4,000 youngsters will visit. And each time we have a school, we've probably got 60 youngsters per session in. So that takes a bit of coaching.
So you see a lot of young players come through.
We do. Yeah, and I think it's important that, you know, we utilise the youngsters coming through. We try and spot the best, and then we can try and direct them into other courses and other schemes. We've got a wide variety of development schemes, I suppose, right the way through to our main pathways schemes, working with the Yorkshire Cricket Board, where we'll have a bronze, silver and gold pathways, which are aimed at our best young players that are playing age group cricket. And really, we're looking to bring on, you know, the next set of youngsters that will go on and play for the academy, our own main second team, and hopefully go and play first-class cricket and beyond.
And there's a lot.
So we do it within the. Sorry, I was just going to say to finish there. Within the centre, there's a wide variety of people and a wide variety of skill levels that come through. We have courses that run probably four nights a week, and then Saturdays and Sundays as well. And it's aimed at different levels of people. And the nice thing, what we try to do is make sure everybody can play and everybody can participate and everybody finds their own level, and we try and challenge them and move them up.
And is there a knack to spotting a talented player? You know, is there something you can see in someone that makes you think that this guy has something which is different from others?
Well, I think most people, whatever sport you're playing, some people have more natural ability than others, and that tends to stand out at a young age. The difficulty with most sports is that people grow and develop at different ages, and you've got to be aware of that. But most people, you know, usually have a little bit of a natural ability that stands out and makes them slightly different. And once you can spot that, you can work with them to develop them in a number of ways. And I think, you know, most skills can be improved upon. You're always looking for somebody that has that little bit extra.
And can you say what that is, or is it just something you get a feel for over time and you can't really pin it down?
I think it just comes with experience. And, you know, it might be, you know, a lot of it might just be the makeup of the individual. You know, you're looking for people that have a big heart, a big drive and ambition to want to do well. But they also need, a high quality of skill. But, you know, I mean, I've got a youngster coming through at the moment that can bat equally well left-handed and right-handed.
Right.
And and bowls really quickly right-armed. Can't bowl left-armed, but he can throw left-handed. And it's just bizarre. But you look at that and you think, wow, there's something, you know, just a little bit different. And at 11 years of age, it's quite special. So, you know, I think you kind of see things, you know, and most people, as I say, will have something that will just stand out and make them different from the crowd.
You played professionally yourself for 15 years. What's the difference between a professional cricketer and someone who makes it to the top level of, say, club cricket but can't quite make it through to the next level? What's the difference in your mind?
I think at the end of it, a lot of it boils down to self-belief and self-confidence. As glamorous as the game looks at times, it's quite tough, and mentally it's very tough because there's only you out there playing against the opposition. Although it's a team game, it's actually made up of 11 individuals cricket, and you need all the individuals to play well together, but you need each individual to play well for themselves as well. And it's quite tough mentally, and certainly when things aren't always going well for you, you've got to have a really strong self-belief and that you can succeed. And I think that's the key difference, that, you know, mentally you've got to be really strong.
Speaking of club cricket, you're still involved in club cricket locally, aren't you?
Yeah, very much so.
What's the attraction of playing and coaching at grassroots level?
I enjoy the game. I love the game. I still enjoy playing. I still enjoy batting and bowling and fielding, which, I'm quite surprised that considering how long I've played now. But no, it's just a love of the game deep down. And I also, you know, the coaching side, it's in one sense, it's nice to give a little bit back, but it's also more that, you know, it's great to work alongside fellow sports people and cricketers in particular and see them develop and give them opportunities to develop. And I think that's the most rewarding situation, that at the end of the day, you can see people over a number of years and you can see them improve.
Finally, you must have had a few tales of dressing room antics over the years. Does anything spring to mind that happened that was funny or strange?
Not that it's repeatable. What I would say is, you know, the greatest thing about any sport and the one thing that I miss now is the actual changing room crack and the camaraderie that you built with that and the rapport you had with your fellow players. I certainly don't miss, to a certain extent, the ducking and weaving and getting out of the way of the ball. But I do miss that general banter that goes on day to day. And, you know, some people are naturally humorous and like to wind people up more than others. And, you know, certainly we have people like Neil Hartley and Ian Swallow in our team. Anthony McGrath has always been like that, and, you know, from a very young age. And then that, in fairness, of the heart and soul of the change room, you know, every change room needs people like that.
Now that's all we've got time for this week. Don't forget, you can get even more cricket coaching tips on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site's updated daily. You can also subscribe to the show for free in iTunes. Just look for My Cricket Coach in the search box, or click on the subscribe button in iTunes in this week's show notes. If you've got any questions for the coaches, you can email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. So until then, this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And see you in Africa.